In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
It's time to pass the popcorn, our chance to talk movies. We do it every week with Alan Adams of The Main Edge, and it's brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everyone in the family. Hello, Al.
Well, hello. How are you?
I am quite well. How did you survive your crazy busy weekend?
I had a lot going on over the course of the weekend.
Well, you did. You were hosting the Improv Me Festival, the fifth annual collection this year of the best improv talent in the state of Maine, and I heard that went quite well.
Yeah, no, we had a nice time. The three sessions were pretty well attended. Saw some great stuff from groups from all over the state. The focus group did themselves proud for two sessions, one Friday night, one Saturday night. Our friends from Teachers Lounge Mafia in Farmington and from Improv Acadia in Bar Harbor were great on Friday night. We had some groups, Queen City Improv from here in Bangor, Mainly Improv from Southern Maine, Running with Scissors from Portland, and then the folks from the Fresnel Theater down in Portland brought their the comedy sports format to the Improv Me Festival.
Abby said that was really good.
Well, I was unfamiliar. Like, I mean, I had never seen it before. I had the basic idea of what it was about, this sort of, like, you know, basically improv as a sport, hence the name comedy sports. But I guess I didn't really understand what that meant as far as, like, how it would actually play out. And they did a drastically truncated show because their shows are usually, I think Matt Russell, the guy who runs the show, he said they usually go about three times as long. Wow. So they usually go about an hour and a half with an intermission. They did a wonderful job. Former focus group members Sam Kirkendall and Randy Hunt are involved with that group, and so we got to see them play, which was nice. And then we closed out with a jam, which is something we'd never really done at the festival before, and that turned out to be a lot of fun.
Nice.
So we did that, and then on last night. Due to circumstances, there needed to be a replacement in Penobscot Theater Company's production of Wait Until Dark. Ron Lisnett did the part Thursday, Friday, Saturday, but he had to hit the road to broadcast Maine basketball.
Right,
and so they needed someone to fill in for the very last day, and they asked me if I would do it. When I was asked, I wasn't thinking clearly, and I said, sure. I went over there. I went over there yesterday afternoon and, ran through it once with the incredibly talented woman, Liz, who played the lead, Susan, in that show. She was very generous and very helpful and made sure I didn't, trip over anything or step on my own whatnot while I was out there doing my thing. Said the words, hit the marks, got the cues that needed to be gotten in, felt really good about stuff, and then got stuck in the door as I was making my exit. So it was just like,
temporarily? Or
I got through eventually.
Right, so the curtain didn't come down with you.
Goddamn door!
the universe just wanted to make sure I wasn't feeling too good about myself.
Sure, sure.
So, I appreciate that. I appreciate the powers that be making sure to keep me in my place.
You had a hell of a week, from Jeopardy to the festival to that. My God.
Yep. I'm looking forward to not doing anything of the sort for a little while.
How did you manage to get to the movies?
You wouldn't think I'd be able to do it, but I did it not once, but twice.
Oh, my God. Well, tell us more.
Well, I went to see the new Freddie Mercury biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody, and I saw the inexplicable, gritty reboot, The Nutcracker and the Four Realms. Which would you like to hear about first?
Let's start with Nutcracker.
Okay.
Save Freddie Mercury.
Okay. I don't know why this movie exists, Rich. You know how sometimes you'll be watching trailers, and I go to the movies all the time, so I see a lot of trailers. And most of the time you watch a trailer and it's like, oh, okay, it's going to be this. It's going to be that. This is going to be good. This is going to be bad. But sometimes you'll see a trailer and you're like, did everyone else just see that? Is that something? And that's how I felt the first time I saw a trailer for The Nutcracker and the Four Realms. Because, did you want a gritty reboot of the Nutcracker. I mean, I know it certainly wasn't something I was looking for. It
was not on the radar, no.
You know, and turns out the folks at Disney, yes, you always feel good when you see, you know, a movie ostensibly based on some sort of source material. And in the credits, you see suggested by the Nutcracker, suggested by, and it's just like, and I'm like, oh, okay, so it's basically names, and that's pretty much what we got, and that is pretty much what we got. A young woman named Clara, played by Mackenzie Foy, living in old-timey London. It's not necessarily clear exactly when, like early 20th century, if I had to guess, but who knows. She's a mechanically inclined little girl who's living with her brother and sister, who I'm not even going to bother to name because, like, I don't care about them, and the movie cares even less about them. They live at home with their father, who's a very sad man because his wife has passed away, and they're all sad. It's their first Christmas without their mom. He gives them the gifts that their mom intended for them, and she receives this sort of mechanical egg-looking thing that's locked, it's supposed to open, but it can't, needs a key, but there's no key. And they're like, well, what are we going to do? Well, I guess we got to go to the party. And so they go to the annual Christmas Eve party thrown by the inexplicably wealthy and weirdo engineer Drosselmeyer, played by, wait for it, Morgan Freeman. Eye patch and all. And it's just like, oh, okay.
Oh,
this is where we're at. And so she goes down into the basement to talk to Drosselmeyer and ask for his help to get her egg open. And he's like, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. There's expository stuff that, frankly, I wasn't really listening to. And then she leaves, and he talks to his owl about how, well...
I'm sorry, what was that again?
Yeah, his owl. He's got an owl that he talks to. Not a mechanical, like an actual owl.
Because he's Morgan Freeman.
Because he's Morgan Freeman as Drosselmeyer. And he's like, yeah, I'm worried about it too, but... it's what her mother wanted. And then he gives everybody their presents in an elaborate scheme that involves tying strings that travel all the way through his house, and you just find a tag and follow the string to your present because Drosselmeyer's apparently a psychopath. So she finds her string and goes, and instead of getting a present, she just follows the string, and then all of a sudden, she's in the Christmas tree forest.
No, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and she sees the key hanging from a tree, and she's about to get it.
Can't be that easy.
And a naughty mouse steals it. And so she's chasing the mouse, where she has to cross this bridge, but she's not allowed to cross the bridge because of a nutcracker soldier named Philip.
Wow.
And he says, you can't cross the bridge. She's like, but I must cross the bridge. And he's like, you can't cross the bridge. And she's like, well, and he's like, wait a minute. Who are you? And she says, my name is so-and-so. My name's Clara. And she's like, oh my gosh, you're the queen's daughter. Turns out her mom was the queen of the four realms, because apparently that's how these things work.
Makes sense now. It's all becoming so clear.
And then he takes her to where the other regents of the four realms, there's the regent of the land of snowflakes and the land of flowers. And the land of sweets. And the regent of the land of sweets is the sugar plum fairy. Played by Keira Knightley, she's going for it in a way that is probably the highlight of the movie. It turns out that one of the other regents, Madame Ginger, played by Helen Mirren, who's also here inexplicably, is trying to take over the four realms, and so they need to get the key back so they can use the key to activate the machine that Clara's mother built, that uses lasers to bring things to life. Like, all these things were toys and whatnot, and then the laser brought them to life in way...
Wow. Who did this? Who created this story that was suggested by the Nutcracker?
You know, I don't know. It's very unclear.
And
like,
what were they on?
Yeah, it's like somebody sat down and watched the Nutcracker while on mescaline, and it's like, yeah, but what if there was more? Look, and there's a bunch of other stuff that happens that is even more difficult to explain.
How did you keep track of all this?
It was not easy, especially since there was a young man sitting in the seat directly in front of me who was even less interested in the movie than I was.
Oh dear!
But he didn't have the impulse control to stay in his seat, and so he basically was doing laps. there's a possibility that I might have missed some key details.
I don't think they would have mattered.
I don't think so either. It's nonsense. It's just nonsense. And it's somehow they managed to pack all of this nonsense into like 100 minutes. Like, it's an hour and 39 minutes long. It feels twice that because there's so much weird stuff going on. The one thing I will say that is an actual highlight that's actually a really lovely thing dropped in the middle of this giant mess. There's a brief dance interlude. You would think there would be, you know, it wouldn't be that brief and there would be more than one of them, it being the Nutcracker and
right.
all. But no. But you get one brief dance interlude featuring the ballerina Misty Copeland.
Oh.
And it's just, it's beautiful. It's this wonderful, like, beautifully executed moment here in the middle of all this stuff. And then that goes away, and it's like, oh, right, yeah, we're in this crazy lunatic land, and none of this makes sense. Visually, very interesting in a lot of places, but there's just no story there. And I regret going to see this movie.
All right, let's move on to a Bohemian Rhapsody that I, as a Queen fan, I want it to be good.
It's pretty good.
Okay, I'll take that.
It's the sort of movie that I think could have been great and probably should have been great, but ran into a couple of obstacles, some self-inflicted, some inflicted by circumstance. The big problem is... The guys from Queen, Brian May and Roger Taylor in particular, were very involved and very adamant about not wanting to do anything that might somehow denigrate Freddie Mercury's memory. And it's clear that they loved him and that he was a very important part of their lives. Here's the thing: there's a seedy and kind of sordid aspect to this story that I think needs to be related for it to be, a fully realized narrative of Freddie Mercury's life. Like he was not, he wasn't squeaky clean, and you get some of that. But the reality is, there's a sort of glossiness to all of it that I think sort of undermines the impact of some of the less savory aspects of Freddie Mercury's life. On the other end of things. Bryan Singer is the director, who's already problematic for numerous reasons, but he also basically stopped showing up to work about two-thirds of the way through, and so the cinematographer did a bunch of the direction. They actually brought in another director to finish the film, but by Directors Guild standards, there can only be one director's name on a project, and that name is Bryan Singer's, for better or worse. And you can definitely kind of get that sort of too many cooks vibe from the movie going through. It's the story of Queen. We meet young Farouk, who's a young Parsi man living in London. He's studying design and a baggage handler at Heathrow, played by Rami Malek. He's kind of searching for where he belongs in this world. Goes to see a band at a club and just happens upon them afterwards, after their bass player has left to join another band, bass player / vocalist, and he meets Brian May and Roger Taylor and basically says, I would like to be part of your band. And they're like, yeah, okay, kid. And then he busts out some vocals or whatever, and then the rest, as they say, is history. They get their hands on a bassist, and they go. And they start playing clubs and being very popular in the area, start gaining attention. They wind up with a manager. Jim Reed, I believe his name was, played by Aidan Gillen, best known as Littlefinger from Game of Thrones. That's who he's always going to be. We kind of follow their careers. They get bigger and bigger and they're touring. He marries a young woman by the name of Mary Austin. He's in love with her, but as he's out on tour, he starts to question his own sexual proclivities. He starts to wonder, maybe this is more of who I am. And when ultimately revealing that to Mary, she basically is heartbroken, and is heartbroken not least because she outright says it. She's like, the worst part is I can't even blame you because it's not your fault. Mm. Which is, a very progressive sort of attitude to have in the mid-1970s. But from there, we see as the relationship with EMI sours after Ray Foster refuses to release Bohemian Rhapsody as the first single off Night at the Opera. Ray Foster, played by Mike Myers.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they literally drop a Wayne's World joke into that scene, which makes me very, very happy. And then we watch as the relationship with the band deteriorates. He gets the offer from CBS Records to go out and make a solo record while sort of under the influence of his personal assistant slash lover, Paul Prenter. And yeah, and we kind of watch as his life starts to sort of spiral downward until finally he is confronted by his now friend, Mary, and who tells him how much Paul has been controlling him, isolating him, manipulating him. And he breaks loose. Paul immediately goes to the tabloids with all the sordid details of the lives they've been leading together. And Freddie gets back with Queen, and they do Live Aid, which is the sort of the climactic moment.
And apparently, from what I've read, they took a little poetic license to tie up some loose ends and make it seem a bit more clear than it really was.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the issue, and that's part of what keeps this movie from being like as good as I think it should have been. And that's not to say it's not good, because I think it is, but it's just they took the path of least resistance, I think, in a couple of places. There are some pretty glaring omissions if you're a big Queen fan, where you're gonna find yourself asking some questions. You know, and they, you know, they take a liberty here, a liberty there. And that's okay. Like, yeah. It's still not like a hagiography. Like, right. It's a relatively honest treatment. It's just, I don't know, sanitized. Yeah.
How are the concert sequences?
They're good. They've done a wonderful job. The Live Aid sequence, especially at the end, they do a remarkable job of sort of, you know, recapturing the just incredible energy of that set, because that was such a tremendous, tremendous moment in the history of rock music. The movie does have its faults. One place where it is not at fault is the performance of Rami Malek. He is phenomenal. Like, he's so good. Like, and it's not like he's doing he's not doing an impression of Freddie Mercury, if that makes sense. Like, he's just found a way to sort of capture some of the spirit. There's a stylistic sort of flamboyance to Freddie Mercury as a presence that I think was part of what made him so so engaging and so so incredible as a performer. And Malek really finds a way to tap into that in a way that I don't think I expected him to be able to. Like, I'm not super familiar with the guy's work, but nothing I had seen up until this point had given me any indication that this was something he was going to be able to do as well as he does it. The rest of the cast, like, everybody does a great job. Like, that's, the performances are a big part of why this movie is as successful as it is. You know, plus you have some of the greatest rock music that's ever been made. Like, Queen's catalog is just packed with all-time greats, and you get to hear a lot of them over the course of this movie. So,
excellent.
Yeah, like I said, could have been better, could have been a lot worse. So yeah, if you're a fan of the band, I would say by all means check it out.
Alan Adams talking movies here on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Go get some rest.
I'm gonna go take a nap.
You've earned that.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, buddy.